at the piles upon piles of heavy defense works and the squalor that crusted over it all. And the shame of it made me nearly sick. This was the world we had made. This was the world he had fought for and preserved, and we had made it diseased. By the time I was reunited with Jack, I could not hide my disquiet. She looked at me with concern, and we retired to my chambers alone. "Did you speak to him again?" she asked, desperate for news despite her anxiety on my behalf. "A little. Not much." "Then you were right to go." She became animated, trying to make me feel better. "This is the start of something new. You're placed well to benefit. He'll need counselors, ones who understand how things work now." But that was the problem. I had done more than understand it. I had contributed to it. I was part of the decay. We all were. "He needs no counselors," I said, sinking onto my fine couch miserably. "Really, truly, he needs none of us at all." I must have slept, perhaps for only a few hours, perhaps for much longer. I had awful dreams, even worse than I had had over the past weeks and months, and I could feel myself thrashing in my sleep. In the most vivid of them, I felt that the chamber around me was burning, the flames streaking up the drapes and crashing into the high ceiling. I saw faces in those flames, inhuman faces with stretched jaws and long fangs. I awoke to find Jack shaking me. "Oh, only a dream," I mumbled, coming to slowly. I could see the intact outline of my bedchamber, and the walls were not burning. "No," she said, her expression terrible. "Not any more." She dragged me from my couch. My robes were sticky with sweat, but she gave me no chance to change them. I noticed as we hurried through the corridors that the light from outside was even redder than before, arterial in intensity and flashing wildly. The air was hotter than it had ever been, hard to breathe and full of choking grit. "What is this?" I blurted, still disorientated. "How long was I out?" She didn't answer, but hauled me to a high balcony. We stumbled into the open, and the curtains flapped wildly about us. I could see the Lion's Gate void port laid out far below. It was a long way away, screened by shifting palls of ash and dust, but I could see enough. I staggered, catching hold of the railing. Jack reached for me, holding me up, but she was already trembling, her whole body rigid with shudders. I had no words. I had no thoughts. I felt like I wanted to scream, but no sound came out. From somewhere, some old instinct that wouldn't quite leave me, I wanted to ask where Gilliman was, where Valoris was, where the High Lords were, whether we could get our forces into place and do what needed to be done. But my lips would no longer move. I just stood there, paralyzed, rooted with fear, and said nothing. We no longer needed to worry about Cadia. We no longer needed to worry about anything. It had happened at last, everything that the prophets had foretold and that we had ignored. The Eye had come. The Eye had come to Terra.
Chapter 17. Valerian. I had never moved as fast. I had never cleaved as strongly. My muscles, sanctified and gene-wrought, had never responded as perfectly. Killing is an art, just like the others we excel at. When it becomes necessary, we do not treat it as a duty. We treat it as a vocation. We learn the ways of our opponents just as a painter studies her model, observe the light and the shade, the form and heft, the threat and the opportunity. I was alone in that hour, as alone as I have ever been. The Grey Knights were always close by, and fought as an unbreakable unit, and therein lay the essential difference between us. Do not think that we ignored one another. Far from it. We saved one another from death many times in those first few decisive moments. This still remains, though. I fought in the way I had been bred to, driving my superlative physical form to its limit, gauging every threat with a microsecond's precision, relying on the absolute integrity of my equipment. They, though, were a brotherhood. I had learned their names by then. Alcuin, the Justicar, led the squad. They covered one another's backs. They roared encouragement. They watched for a momentary slip from their battle comrades. I witnessed this even as I tore into the heart of the demon kind, and even as the defense lasers on the wall flooded the eerie scene with dazzling light, and even as the golden attack craft roared overhead to strafe and bludgeon. I could sense their psychic overspill as they waded into the enemy, blades and hammers whirling. Every physical blow was matched by a corresponding thrust of the mind, and their esoteric halberds flared with the increase in velocity. Thus we entered the arena of the enemy, like and yet unlike to one another, a lion set beside angels. They screamed at us, many of them greater in stature even than me. By then their witch birth was complete. Their heads had elongated sickeningly, their claws had extended, their legs had firmed into glossy, reverse-angled, hoof-terminated striders. They had the mania of victory in those black eyes, fueled by the legions of their own kind around them. A musk of pure bloodlust clotted the air, heady and overpowering. Already I could see lesser demon kind scrambling up the lower reaches of the walls, freezing their grip onto pitted adamantium, forming bridges with their own bodies to allow greater warriors to vault above them. The horde was endless, merged with both heaven and earth, a liquid mass of writhing malignance rammed hard onto the plane of mortal experience. We both knew what they were, Alcuin and I. We knew, as others could not, that these things were our own psyches made into flesh. We knew that our rage, any rage, fueled them and made them stronger. They fed from our basest instincts, and so we were doing nothing so much as fighting ourselves. All we had left were the things that remained once rage was purged from us. Duty, commitment, resolve. I punched my fist through the heart of a bloodletter and yanked it from its swelter chest, then swung around to lance the tip of Gnosis through the neck of another, then crunched my elbow into the spine of a third before spinning to slam my glaive's hilt into a fourth. I was lost in numerology by then, reaching into the near future, scrutinizing everything as I moved, calm at the epicenter of the hurricane. Alcuin forged a path beside me, driving the Neverborn back and slicing them apart with psi-laced blows from his mighty demon hammer. His troops stayed close, locking and swaying in concert, crying words of denunciation as they struck their blades home. The demon was harmed by the weapons of eternity, this we knew. The heavy barrage of lasfire from the parapets, cutting through the blood rain in boiling volleys, could slow or inconvenience them, but to kill a demon, one had to return to the primordial methods of fist and blade. They had been spawned from our oldest wars and our oldest hates, and we would never drag ourselves away from that primal genesis. The gate itself was still a kilometer distant, shrouded in burning palls and screened by heavy curtains of inundation. Its summit was aflame, cut open by the massed reports of macro cannons and las emplacements. Flyers swarmed over it, launched from pads within the palace, and battle was joined in the skies. Heavy bolters opened up, driving long furrows into the already deep-scored terrain, and sending demons smashing back into their ravening kind, who tore them open and devoured them before turning back to the assault, their lolling maws dripping with black ichor. The wall itself was a false protection. The demons would not halt at it, but given time would swarm and wrench and claw it down. They needed to be met on the field of battle, their hate matched with zeal. I swung my blade and sent its tip whistling through the midriff of a racing bloodletter, then pivoted to drive the shaft into the jaws of another. They had not laid a claw on me yet, but the numbers were beyond comprehension, and more were being spun from the flames, vomited out into reality, tumbling into instantiation to launch into us. I saw one of Alcuin's squad reel as he was struck, his psychic defenses momentarily breached, and I interposed myself between him and his attacker, slicing its head from its shoulders before spinning back to face the next one. That left me a fraction of a second shy of where I needed to be, and the first blow cracked into my pauldron, knocking me into the embrace of a fanged and winged terror.
"Exilium Demonica!"
cried Alcuin, hurling his hammerhead at the creature. The air cracked open, sending a searing beam of silver light crashing into the monster's chest, throwing it deep into the advancing horde, where its own kind tore it to scraps before bounding on to reach us. Then we were fighting again. No time to issue a word of thanks, our limbs blurred, our hearts flooding us with hyperadrenaline, our eyes fixed on the myriad and shifting goals. All this was the work of seconds. That was all it took for the greater forces on the wall to perceive the danger and react to it. Even in the midst of my combat, lost in a press of strike and counter-strike, my spirit soared to see the response from my beleaguered palace. Egress points opened, wreathed in coronas of heavy bolter protection, exposing the red raw innards of the wall fortress, and down from those openings streamed the force that had been kept hidden for 10,000 years. In phalanxes of black and gold, my brothers streamed from the lion's gate in numbers not seen since the War of Shame, their spears glinting in piercing ranks of tempered steel. I saw banners hauled aloft, the same golden standards we had borne into battle in the Age of Wonder, still unsullied after the passage of millennia. Heavy gunnery platforms dropped from the innards of hovering transports, opening up with spinning clouds of destruction. Land raiders in gold and black trundled out from cover, spitting arm-thick beams of lasfire. Italia was there, leading a charge down the right flank directly into the path of one of the greater demons. Valoris surged down the very center, his spear flaming as it cut deep into the enemy hordes. I saw warriors in burnished terminator plate lumber into contact, their claws cutting the air around them into slivers, and behind them the revered fallen, swaggering from the bellies of steaming drop pods, wielding sword and shield, and towering over all but the greatest of the Neverborn. The Adeptus Custodes had issued to war, and the throne world reeled now under the massed tread of its most potent sons. The tide of crimson met the flood of gold, and the screams of the dissipated became truly frenzied. The twin armies smashed into a tangled contact, a serried wave of impacts that cracked the rockcrete and threw the blood rain into whirling vortices. I fought on, driving myself ever harder, feeling an inexplicable joy well up through my speed-smeared limbs, even as I rent and tore and hacked and gouged. I could have cried out loud. I could have lost myself in the moment, for amid the carnage had come a sight from the lost eons, a fragment of our glorious past made real once more. The Captain General was there, slaying in majesty. The 10,000 were unleashed, pouring their slow-burning fury onto the only enemy that had ever truly mattered. We had returned.
Chapter 18. Alea. The fight that day was vile and grim, and I hated it. Remember this. We were immune to the psychic dread cast by the Shedim. We did not see them as fearsome or dreadful, just execrable and never-ending, like a continent of vicious lake worms. The entire scene before us was a pall of sludge kicked up in dirt, caked in blood, and sluiced in a deluge of toxins. Valerian remembers it differently, of course. All those others who were present remember it differently to us. There's a philosophical question to be asked here, I suppose. Which of us saw things truly? You could try to answer that if you really wanted, but you'd soon be caught up in the kind of tedious theological discussions that the custodians delight in when they're not lopping the heads off threats to the throne. We never saw the roaring curtains of warp fire, and we never saw the leering faces in the dark. The earth did not glow like magma. It was a stinking mass of rotten asphalt and broken rockcrete. Terra, much to my disappointment, was not a scintillating world of spires and turrets, but a colossally foul sink of dilapidation. We only had moments to take this in, however. Our lander must have malfunctioned on the way down, or perhaps had been hit by something, for we crashed to earth on the extreme right flank of the erupting melee. As I charged down the ramp, I could see a swamp of black and grey glistening ahead of me, and demons squirming like insects in spoil. As I have already noted, Navradaran was not a fool. He had dispatched the majority of the landers closer in towards the wall, where they slammed down just ahead of the advancing lines of custodians. Those of my sisters who had been brought back to Terra in the months past, no doubt, marched with them too, interlocking their unique capabilities with those of their counterparts. That was the very essence of it, you see. That was why the past centuries had been such a miserable mistake. We had been made to fight alongside one another, two halves of a greater whole. The custodians were individually the finest warriors ever created, but they were not themselves gifted with psychic mastery, and nor could they dissipate the auras of destruction created by the Shedim. That was our task. We had always gone into battle alongside them, draining the most potent aspect of our enemy from them, reducing them to the purely physical. I had heard it said that there was nothing purely physical that a custodian could not kill, and so we complemented one another perfectly. Later, when I learned more of their ways and had to listen to them tell me over and over again how much they carried the guilt of the past on their shoulders, I wondered if our own role might have been deliberately suppressed. Perhaps it was easier for them to retreat into the palace while we withered away in the void, erasing the old patterns so they'd never have to be reminded how we used to wage war. I don't really think that's what happened. Bitterness can give you strange ideas, though. Right then, of course, I had no time to speculate about anything. We were far from any kind of support, lost amid the seething morass of hateful and dangerous Shedim. We were hardly defenseless, but there were only five of us, and our lander's bolter feed would soon run out of shells. I had to make a decision quickly. I looked at the walls, too far away despite the advancing lines of defenders. I looked out at the city behind us, just as distant and aside from some cover, lacking any advantage. I looked towards the centre of the battlefield, an absolute pit of horror, presided over by eight massive Shaitane, with their bunched arms, withered wings and dripping black horns. I might have laughed at the pointlessness of it, had I not caught a flash of silver, followed by a briefer flash of gold, more than 200 meters away, through a forest of clutching demon kind, but obviously still fighting. That was it. That was our best chance of surviving more than a few seconds. I signaled to my sisters, some of whom had seen the same opportunity. We charged into contact, slamming into the oncoming tide of greasy Shedim, hurling our great blades around us in withering arcs. Thrown, but it was terrible fighting. We blunted the worst of their soul-cracking aura, but that still left creatures of iron-bound sinew and steel-pinned teeth. They carried their own crude blades, forged from blunt iron, and every time I countered their blows, I felt my bones jar. This was not the task we had been made for. We were witch hunters, seekers of shadows, fast-moving and lightly armored. One-on-one we could slaughter these things, but the numbers would get to us eventually. My blade churned faster, desperately, propelled now two-handed. We formed into a tight knot, fighting back to back and pushing as fast as we dared across the open terrain. They hated us, those things. They hated us even more than the custodians who so brutally carved them apart, because all the Shedim could do was kill our bodies. And that had no appeal for creatures nourished by the torture of souls. I think we horrified them more than anything else. I think we drew more than our share towards us, and that just made me angrier the longer we were out there. I felt slime splatter across my exposed forehead, and it sizzled acidly on my skin. A cleaver snagged on my calf, biting through my armor nearly down to the flesh. My cloak was ripped into tatters, my breastplate smacked by a blow that nearly upended me. Sister Geranda was the first to be killed, bringing up our rear. I didn't see it happen, but I heard the anguished scream. I finished off the mess of slime and scales that was going for my throat before I could turn to see them drag her into their midst and begin the feast. We couldn't reach her. I felt my vision go black. I felt my fury roar out of me, spiraling and augmenting. In another age, I might have cried out that fury, but I still had my vow, so redoubled the savagery of my assault. I ripped out teeth, I broke backs, I stripped the skin from their bones and flung the carcasses aside. We all did the same, fighting in a way that could not last, for we were mortal after all, and those we cut into could do this forever. But we did enough. We broke fast through the horde, shriving them of their greatest gifts and finishing the task with our great blades. Soon I could see the object of our endeavours, fighting just ahead of us. I saw the aura of gold and the flash of hard silver light, and knew that we would come among them soon. Even our proximity aided them. I saw them kill more swiftly and more surely, and saw the demons fall back before their onslaught. The custodian was ploughing through them now, throwing Shedim aside in great haymaking thrusts of his guardian spear. Those with him, Adeptus Astartes in archaic plate of silver-grey, blasted them into shriveled ash. I began to see a way for us to survive this, together, fighting hard to link up with the huge counterattack, even now surging down from the walls. Then the shadow fell across us all, huge and repulsive. I looked up, and suddenly survival looked a very distant prospect indeed.
Chapter 19. Valerian. In truth, I never saw Alea fight her way towards me until she was virtually among us. She finds this extremely irritating, though I have since learned that Alea is angered by all manner of strange things. If I had detected her earlier, it might have changed our strategy, since I became aware in those few moments just what a critical advantage it was to have the sisters fighting with us. Valoris was, as ever, prescient in this. Alone of the High Lords, he had anticipated the need to restore the structures of the past, and alone of the High Lords, he had no prejudice against the non-souled. The records will tell a different tale, I suspect. They will announce that the Fenris disaster prompted the Council to act, and this version will reflect glory on the mortal masters of the Imperium. Though the story has some truth to it, the later order originated, I understand, from the same Chancellor Tyron, whom I met myself. Anyone who understands the vast distances they had to cover, and the nature of the warp, will know that the program must have been enacted many months, maybe even years, before that command was given. In all that followed, I remained struck by how instantly we slotted back into those ancient modes of combat. We needed no exhaustive instruction, but fell into our roles instinctively. They are formidable fighters, the sisters. I have nothing but respect for the physical prowess they display, although that is not their primary function on the battlefield. They position themselves in the greatest danger by doing what they do. They are more lightly armoured than we, and attract the larger share of animus from the creatures of the warp. As for ourselves, we had never lost the ability to converse in fluent thought-mark. It was one of the martial disciplines we had maintained over the many millennia, and on that day our prudence was rewarded. Those who marched with the Captain General from the Lion's Gate were able to do so in perfect concert, and even for those of us sundered from the main host by circumstance, such as Alea and myself, our combined methods of controlled violence proved instantly effective. It was less easy for Alcuin and his battle brothers. They were all psychers of the most acute kind, and their every waking movement was animated by the warp. For them, the ether and the materium were intrinsically linked, two sides of the same blade that they balanced on effortlessly, and they were accustomed to fighting with the two worlds enmeshed. Even their armor is psi-enhanced, augmenting the cruder biological links used by their counterparts in other chapters. The arrival of Alea and her sisters restricted what they could do, and reduced them to fighting as solely physical warriors. In the circumstances, however, that was a sacrifice I was willing to make. The Grey Knights, even stripped of the bulk of their psychic expertise, were still among the finest fighters I have ever encountered, and they adjusted to the new situation with uncomplaining precision. Robbing the demons of their most dreadful powers was worth the fractional reduction in my allies' flexibility, and we all fought from then onwards as if facing beasts rather than thought monsters. Indeed, they yowled like beasts then, the demon kind. Their exultation was torn from their jaws, and their feral glee was replaced by a kind of outrage. They hated this. They hated being denuded of their own realm's purest dimension and being forced to engage us on mortal terms. In the moments before I saw Alea emerge, I do remember finding the fighting suddenly and inexplicably easier. We had pushed hard into that horde's heart, aiming for the high stages of an old landing pad. Both Alcuin and I had seen the potential of it, a high-raised platform ringed by stairways, commanding a vantage over the eastern portion of the huge battlefield. If we could make that, I judged, it would serve two purposes, to give us higher ground to defend against the endless tide of the enemy, and to make us visible to Valoris's forces advancing from the north. If we could endure long enough, inward teleportation or airdrop could secure the position, opening a second front against the enemy and dividing them. We had almost gained that location when the sisters reached us. Even as I wondered why I was killing the demonic horde with such fluency, I saw the woman I would later know as Tanau Alea driving into them with all the fury of a berserk. She threw herself around in what I might have thought was reckless blood mania, had it not been so bluntly effective. She did not engage the enemy so much as run through them. My first thought on witnessing such a style of combat was that she would soon exhaust herself, allowing the demons to take advantage once she tired. But of course, that was to miss the purpose of the single-minded charge. They had worked so hard in order to link with us, to form up into a combination that the Neverborn would find impossible to counter. After that, we were fighting together, sliding in amongst one another, dancing and parrying and interweaving as if born to it. Alcuin's squad must have found the sisters uniquely unsettling, even painful, but in the thick of that combat, they had no choice but to adapt. The 10 of us formed into a tight circle of bodies, myself and the Grey Knights taking the brunt of the physical assault, the sisters directing their null effect from the shadow of our blades. Whenever one of us tired or made a mistake, another would leap into the breach. We left a trail of slaughter behind us, and finally gained the foot of the stairs. I looked up, expecting to see the platform rear above us, ready to plan our assault on the high position. Only then did I see what we had attracted, rushing across the fire-swept platform to meet us. Alea calls such things by the ancient name, Shaitane. That captures the stature and the horror better than the low Gothic, I think. It was truly gigantic, far greater than any foe I have engaged before or since. It reared high into the blood rainstorm, its wings lashing like the sails of some ancient galleon. Its cloven hooves sunk deep into the rockcrete with every step, breaking the earth into fresh plumes of flame. Its movements were horrific, bleeding with the same power a titan has, but bound up in sinew and gristle and bone. Its axe alone was the size of a dreadnought chassis, and as the blade whistled through the air, it left a trail of fire in its wake. It crashed down onto the platform, threw its muscle-corded arms wide, and roared in challenge. The gale of that roar sent the lesser demons flying into one another, and even we had to lean into that foul, spittle-flecked storm of meat-rotten breath. I could sense perversion radiating from its burning heart over the dampening aegis generated by the sisters. It was like a furnace, a cauldron of boiling and uncontrollable rage. Something about it spoke of eternity, of its near-infinite malice dragged up from the deepest vortices of the hellplane in which it was enthroned. I swung Gnosis round, its blade edge crackling with disruptor energies. "This is his realm," I told it calmly. "You feared it before, you will fear it again." Then I was moving, vaulting up the stairs, generating the momentum I would need to counter the demon's incredible mass. None of my companions hesitated. They all came with me, racing up the stairs, their blades poised. Alcuin was at my left shoulder, crying out words of fell power and denunciation, his demon hammer now psychically inert, but still physically powerful. His battle brothers laid down a rain of shells from their wrist-mounted storm bolters. Alea was at my right hand, her silence, if anything, more daunting, her eyes black with fury, and behind her came the others, running in lockstep, charging into the heart of darkness. As I reached the summit, I leapt high, bracing my spear to meet the scything path of the great axe. The blades impacted, hell-wrought iron against imperial steel, and the shockwave screamed out across the entire battle plain. I crashed to the ground, thrown wide by the blow, only to be replaced by Alcuin, who slammed his warhammer into the demon's leading greave. His battle brothers threw themselves in close, hacking and thrusting with their great blades, before pulling clear to send volleys of sanctified bolt shells punching into its hide. The sisters charged alongside them, cleaving at the demonic flesh, even as their aura swelled up to deaden its fearsome power. I raced into contact, only to see one of Alcuin's warriors crushed by a single kick from the creature's spiked hoof. It swung around again, vast and ponderous, slamming the axe blade down where two sisters were retreating. The iron head plunged deep into the earth, throwing both from their feet and sending burning cracks snaking across the platform. It was colossal, a soul crucible fueled by veins of molten lead and driven by a core of inextinguishable venom. Our blades barely scratched its flesh, our blows barely halted its heavy rampage. Every pendulous swing of that axe was more than lethal, unleashing forces capable of leveling whole fortresses, and against which our armor was as potent as parchment. If we were to have any chance to end it, we would need to dare the impossible. I sprinted harder, throwing myself high and reaching for the demon's brass disc hauberk. I grasped onto its iron-studded belt with my left hand and plunged Gnosis with all my strength. The blade drove deep, causing a fountain of scorching blood to gush out, splashing against my visor and making me gag from the stench. The demon bellowed and jerked around, trying to throw me loose, but I gripped tightly to both spear and buckle. I heard Alcuin cry out then as he smashed his warhammer into the beast. I caught a blurred glimpse of the sisters racing to carve fresh wounds into its exposed flesh. I twisted Gnosis, trying to drive it under the creature's immense ribcage and prize bone from sinew. Just at the last moment, I saw it release one claw from the axe shaft, ready to seize me, and I yanked Gnosis free, dropping down beneath its twisting bulk and swerving from the outstretched talons. By then, the lesser demons had raced back after us, scrambling up the slope in a skittering wave of crimson flesh. Two of Alcuin's warriors had to turn to hold them back at the head of the stairs, fighting furiously, even as a sister rushed to their aid, further diminishing our assault. The greater demon stamped down again, pulverizing more of the tortured rockcrete. Its axe whistled across, the rune-marked head igniting as it hurtled into one of Alea's troop, bisecting her cleanly and sending the bloody fragments spinning into the masses below. Four null maidens remained standing, four grey knights, all now pressed hard and carrying wounds. I spun in towards the monster again, knowing that only another close-range blow could possibly harm it. It felt like assaulting a living mountain, albeit one that gyrated and thundered and brought down the fires of hell. The platform was slippery with blood by then, dragged down from the unholy rain, and it fizzed and popped against the ever-kindled flame. I jabbed another deep wound into its veined thigh before darting away from the swing of the axe. As the head screamed past me, I twisted and turned, slamming Gnosis down on the great iron shaft of the weapon. The impact was horrific, jarring my arms to the bone and nearly shattering them, but my blade broke through its tortured mass, severing the shaft in two and showering me with flying splinters. The creature roared with true fury then, turning on me. A vast fist punched out, catching me full and sending me flying across the blood-soaked platform. The world spun around me, and sharp pain speared up my right leg as the bone smashed and armor rent. The monster loped after me, shaking off assaults from Alcuin, its blazing red eyes fixed on me. I twisted Gnosis round in my fist, swinging it up even as the demon swept out of the flames. It held the stunted axe, its shaft now broken and little more than a stump below the iron blade, high above its horned head, the muscles on its chain-draped arms taut. I saw its jaws foaming with bloody saliva, its unholy flanks shimmering with sweat, its wings spread wide like a death shroud over us all. I tried to rise, stumbling on my useless limb, and realized then that I would be too slow. I looked up, saw the axe head hurtle down, and knew with all the certainty of my long training that I could not evade it.
Chapter 20. Alea. The Shaitane was a brute. Its essence was so powerful and so profound that even our combined aura of suppression was only partially effective. At times, as we fought it, I even got brief flashes of what it must have seemed like to those with souls. A living furnace, a fire devil, a bull-horned beast that burned and burned, and never went out. But the rest of the time was bad enough. It was fetid like they all were, the clotting aroma of slops and putrescence. It was a thing of death, steeped in the corpses of those it had ended, and the aroma clung to it like plague musk. I was taken aback by the size of it, the sheer bulk of the thing, and our charges felt little more than suicidal. That was before I saw the way the others fought, though. It pains me to say this because I shared a mutual, unavoidable loathing with the Knights of Titan, and still find Valerian's endless piety utterly maddening. But they were magnificent. I came to realize that my observations in the practice cages on the enduring abundance fell far short of the mark. In true combat, they were breathtaking. Alcuin's squad were far faster than I would have thought possible, and the way they combined into a tight-edged force multiplier gave us killing potential far beyond our paltry numbers. They were everything I had been schooled to admire in the Space Marines, implacable, focused, absurdly violent. Perhaps Valerian outstripped them by a fraction, but then there was only one of him, and in that armor he was always destined to catch the eye. I still remember seeing him leap up at the Shaitane's chest and plant that ridiculous spear right into its heart. I could have laughed out loud at the audacity of it. Not only that, but he succeeded in getting out again, trailed by the black strands of the creature's ghastly innards. Perhaps only we sisters could see just how badly he'd wounded it then, for we didn't have to cope with the phantom flames and the sham roar of fractured sigh voices. Of course, they would not have done as well without us. Four null maidens acting in concert can generate a formidable dampening aura, and it crushed the spirit of the Shedim. They became slower, they became weaker, and even their blood-mad lord was stripped of its monstrous braggadocio. We did our part with the blade, too. We hurt it, and that felt good. Every time my sword sliced a chunk of grey skin from the Shaitane's greasy back, my heart rejoiced. I was never going back to my flamer, I resolved then. This was far more rewarding. Once Valerian broke the axe shaft, I thought, dangerously, that we might have a chance. Reva was still alive and fighting beside me, and we rushed forwards, beating even Alcuin to the chance to land a blow. Things moved too quickly after that. I saw Valerian take that pile driver punch direct to his torso, and thought he must surely have been obliterated by it. The demon's fist was almost half as big as he was, and he should have been smashed into pieces. Instead, he just spun away, battered and broken, but still grasping his blade and very much alive. It wouldn't stay that way. The Shaitane was maddened by the mauling of its weapon and raged after him, raising its axe stump two-handed. The thing could move incredibly fast when it wanted, almost as if it could slip between time states. In his half-crushed condition, there was no chance of Valerian evading the coming lunge. By then, Reva and I were running, acting on instinct, throwing ourselves after the huge creature in a frantic attempt to haul it back. I pounced, knowing I was too far away. I was nowhere close to damaging it seriously, but its trailing leg remained in range, and I somehow got my great blade at the right angle and drove it down and down through the creature's straining thews, parting the pale grey strands of slickened muscle until its movement ripped the hilt from my gauntlets. That wouldn't kill it, of course. It wasn't even the greatest of the wounds we had already given it, but it was pushed into its weight-bearing leg, just above its huge ankle bone. And even for a warp-forged horror, that was a bad place to take a skewer. I extended all my null energy into the strike, willing the warp-spun flesh to part and implode. My blade did the rest, blazing with blue flame as it burned within the wound. The entire limb twisted and buckled, and the Shaitane missed its target, slamming the axe head down a fraction to the right of the prone Valerian, and crashing, overbalanced, to the earth. The shock was massive, smashing the already blown asphalt and sending clods of it careening. Its mighty head thumped to the ground, for the first time down at our level, and its wings sagged into crumpled tangles of tattered leather. That was all Valerian needed. I saw him sweep up from the wreckage of the creature's fall, haul his blade over and spin it in a single movement. Crying out loud from the pain and exertion, he drove the spear point first through the demon's throat, powering it with both arms until it almost disappeared into a mire of burning, bubbling ichor. Alcuin was only a fraction of a second behind, leaping high before slamming his demon hammer into the creature's ribs, and then the rest caught up. We forgot ourselves entirely then, in that orgy of slaughter, piling into the enormous, stricken frame, as if it were so much meat, knowing that it could still come back from the most incredible wounds, and determined to stop that happening. At the end, we stood, all of us, drenched in foul fluids, panting hard, dotted amid the ruins of its cyclopean corpse. Valerian limped towards me, and only then could I see the damage he'd taken. I marvelled that he could stand at all, let alone still wield that spear. "That was well done, sister," he said, the first time I had ever heard him speak. It was like hearing something out of a devotional vid, the voice of a martyr sent to comfort the masses, and I instantly found it annoying. There was no respite. The Neverborn still came at us, leaping over the corpse of their lord, as hungry as ever to rip out our throats. The sky was lit with the crisscross of lasbeams and mortar trails. The demon army was still enormous, still assaulting the walls, still raving and bellowing and tearing. The entire palace was half obscured by the dust they kicked up, and we were isolated, set on an island amid that sea of wrath. And yet I could see that the momentum had shifted. Heavy aircraft had been launched and were pummeling the ground-locked demons with punishing volleys of incendiaries. The 10,000 were making ground, driving into the enemy and encircling the great Shaitane. The air still burned and crackled, the ground still trembled, but I could see an end to this. Something had happened to break the demon's advance, though even now the matter remained poised. But we were still alone, and still surrounded. "Back to it," I sighed wearily, taking up my blade once more.
Chapter 21. Tyrion. Once I would have been killed for witnessing what I witnessed then. No matter my rank, no matter the situation, I would have been dragged into an eyeless jail by the Inquisition's henchmen and ended quietly in the dark. I'd seen old warrants, copies of orders signed by commanders on distant worlds, cloaked in euphemistic terms, referring to sterilizations and clearances, but really signifying, I knew, death camps and mind wipes. That was the penalty for looking upon the true face of our greatest enemy, and for millennia there had been good reasons for the sanction. We had to deny what we were facing, or the fate that had befallen Terra over the past months would have befallen all worlds many years ago. We had to lie to ourselves, to the trillions spread across the void, lest we all went mad with fear. The people could not be allowed to know what was waiting for them on the other side of the barrier between life and death. Even the best of us could not be allowed to know. That precept extended to the greatest military figures of our ages, the most powerful cardinals, and yes, even the High Lords themselves. For those, like me, gifted with influence and resources and access to secrets, there was always speculation. We spoke of the Great Enemy, and we had all heard rumors of what that truly meant. As I have said, the existence of the Grey Knights was an open secret to the High Lords and their close counselors, as was the purpose of such bodies as the Ordo Malleus and the Death Watch. We knew the words. We knew the terms. But it is one thing to have a partial understanding of the nature of our foes, and it is one thing to read half-garbled accounts of strange doings on the other side of the galaxy and speculate on what they might mean. But it is another to see with one's own eyes the full, unmediated horror of reality. Looking out that night on the battle for the Lion's Gate, I could appreciate the wisdom of those who had proscribed even the very mention of the diabolic from our waking lives. They were cautious, those early drafters of the Great Law, and they were sensible. They knew that only a very few could be trusted with such truths, that most were not strong enough. I had never doubted that wisdom, and so had never truly abused my office to delve into matters that were not within my limited remit. As I watched then, I realized I was weeping. I was crying uncontrollably, racked with a terrible fear and a horror that clutched at my bones and chilled them to ice. I was so far from it all, high up in the most secure pinnacles of the Senatorum Imperialis, surrounded by Palatine sentinels and accompanied by Jack. And still, the sight overcame me entirely. I wanted to pull away, to turn from it, and flee deep into the vaults beneath. If I had given in then, I might have tried to burrow my way down into the throne room itself, to fall prostrate before the only one of our race who had ever seriously stood up to the nightmares of eternity. Somehow, I forced myself to stay. After all, what I witnessed then was being observed by millions of soldiers on the walls and by thousands of appalled scholars in their great towers. The conflagration could be seen for miles. We saw the clouds break with deluges of bloody rain. We saw the sky crack and the flames shoot up from the earth. We saw those flames twist and grow and spew forth creatures of such dazzling maleficence that the only response was to scream out, or cower down out of view, or remain rooted in disbelief and crippling fear. That was the moment when the old precept changed. We could no longer pretend, and we could no longer hide. Terror was not like those other worlds. Its billions were not easily erased from history, and if we had slaughtered all those who saw the demons cavort on that night, we would have had an empty palace and a silent council chamber. I knew I would only be a spectator, but I felt it important that someone tried to remember what happened, and that we did not leave the record of it to the warriors we had built to be capable of fighting such monsters. All of them, the custodians, the space marines, the Sisters of Silence, had been hollowed out to make them stronger. They were no longer truly human, any of them, and such was their sacrifice. They were both better and worse than we were, and I would be damned if they and only they became the arbiters of history in this, the Imperium, made to shelter humanity. By the time I reached my vantage, the battle was already at its peak. I witnessed Valoris lead his columns into the very heart of the heaving mass of invaders. They poured out of the Lion's Gate before spreading into hundreds of tiny points of light, mingling with the oncoming cohorts like liquid. I refused the offer of a visual augmenter, knowing that close-up images might haunt me forever, and did my best to watch without losing control of my faculties. For a long time, it seemed to me the battle was horribly poised. The defense lasers on the walls laid down such a blistering curtain of fire that it made my eyes stream just to witness it, and we sent flight after flight of gunships strafing the enemy ranks. But the only truly effective counterattack came from those warriors on the ground who could bring their ancient weaponry to bear up close. The worst to witness were the greatest of the demons, those mighty roaring creatures of flame that strode across the battlefield like flesh-bound towers. I could not even glance at them directly, and merely hearing their roars even from so far away was physically painful. Those things led the charge against the Lion's Gate itself, and when their sorcerous fire met the barrage from the las cannons, the resulting inferno was like the void-born destruction of stars. Some of them were cast down by the custodians, working in conjunction with whole phalanxes of Null Maidens, and the many brutal duels between demon and defender were horrific to witness. But they could not all be stopped, and I could only watch as the gate itself was finally breached, its towers torn down, and its guns silenced. I watched the brazen doors crumble under the relentless onslaught, and saw the first of the behemoths pass through the portal. Even at such a time of unsurpassed destruction, nothing I lived through then was worse than that sight. I saw the vast creature stride across the threshold, its whip of flame curling about its bloody torso, its obscene head splayed open in a roar of triumph. I saw the ancient defenses stacked around it slide into heaps of burning rubble, and saw the defenders buried alive even as they ran from their stations in terror. I do not know what would have transpired if he had not been with us that night. I like to think that Valoris would have rallied his troops, thousands of which were still contesting the great Voidport expanse beyond, and pulled back to defeat it. I like to think that if he had somehow failed in that, the mortal defenders, who still numbered in the millions, would have been able to staunch the assault with the sacrifice of their own lives. In the end, neither was needed. The Lord Gilliman came at last, hastening down from the heights of the Sanctum. He brought with him all those he had been able to gather from his already war-wearied task force. Companies of Space Marines from many chapters, the living saints with their halos of gold, the last of the Grey Knights summoned from Luna. That force, so small in number compared with the deluge of monsters that had spilled through the gate, took them on. You will never hear an account of that battle, not as you will hear accounts of his triumphant return to Terra, nor the great crusade that followed those days. You will never hear how Rabute Gilliman fought the greater demon atop the ruins of the Lion's Gate as the skies rained crimson tears around them. You will never read of how the two of them dueled amid the screams and the rearing flames, each testing the other to destruction, teetering on the edge of the treacherous precipice while the hordes of damnation seethed below. You will never hear how the monster nearly ripped him apart with a single lash of its whip, or how his brow glowed with the light of the sun when he fought, or how in the end he drove his sword into the demon's chest and clean out the other side. You will never hear how he choked the life from that unnatural leviathan with his great gauntlets, then cast its body down from the pyramid of debris to break apart on the bloody dust below. I watched it all through my tears, and felt no shame in that. My knuckles were white on the railings, my heart was hammering like a child's. I watched Gilliman fight, a scene dragged straight from the Age of Legends, and for a moment I imagined I could have been there, right at the start, when it was the War Master's armies breaking through the walls. You might think me fortunate to have seen such things. If you had asked me in my youth what I would have given to see a Primarch take the fight to our greatest enemy, I might have told you that I would have happily died for the privilege. But just then, all I felt was a kind of numbing grief. For so long we had been in moral stasis, rehearsing old stories and drawing strength from them. We laughed about the Primarch's returning, mostly because we knew it would never happen. Now that it had, I felt empty. The dream had not become reality. Reality had become like a dream. More than the gate was destroyed on that night. As I watched the columns of smoke rise into the stormlight and saw the vengeful custodians pursue the screaming demons far from the burning walls, I knew that the victory had only been fleeting, and that the real change had already taken place. We had grown used to keeping our fears at arm's length, locked behind Cadia's distant barrier. Now, with the faltering of the Astronomicon and the waning of our long watch, we would never again be able to lie to ourselves about the nature of what we faced. If they could strike at us here, they could strike at us anywhere. No walls would be too high, no protection too complete, no hidden citadel beyond their reach. I turned away then, unwilling to see the final carnage unfold. My hands were still shaking, my cheeks moist. I felt empty, like a dried-up husk thrown from the fire. The palace still stood. It was everything else that had been ruined.
Chapter 22. Valerian. I did not leave that battlefield until the weak sun was high in the sky and the clouds glowed a dirty pink. Slaying the bloodthirster was only the beginning, and there were thousands of lesser demonkind still to contest. The creatures of the warp loathe and fear one another far more than they do us, and so the killing of their master did not daunt them. If anything, it freed them to commit even more reckless acts of ferocity. They surged up the stairs and streamed across the platform, yowling and bounding with abandon. We might yet have died had we not remained close to one another. My fighting was badly hampered by my wound, although my sinews re-knit and my bones reformed even as I still wielded Gnosis. Such was the resilience of my gene-wrought body. Alcuin was the linchpin in those moments, and had been given fresh vigour by the sight of the demon's demise. He led the counter-assault, smiting the Neverborn with a viciousness that I doubt any other could have matched just then. He truly hated those things, and I must admit that it made him brutally efficient. We took more losses, though, and as I looked out at that ocean of detestation, I suspected our resistance would only last a finite time before it was snuffed out. We were lucky, I suppose. Or, as I do not strictly believe in luck, we must have been favoured yet by his gaze. I had begun to think of myself as being somewhat beyond his consideration since my failure at the throne, and thus did not look for any especial indulgence from the ways of fate. But our duel with the bloodthirster had been noticed. Valoris had dispatched carders of our finest warriors to engage all eight of them, and he himself had led the charge against those at the heart of the horde. Just as I began to think we would be overwhelmed at last, golden lifters braved the blood rain and the fire lightning to deliver terminator-clad brethren to our side, as well as the contemptor-entombed Inades, who strode from his attack craft, surrounded by a glittering force aegis, and waded into the demons with disdainful majesty. Then I knew we would survive. I took it upon myself to protect the Sisters of Silence, whose efforts in reaching us, and then warding us, had been exhausting for them. Only three remained alive, including the one who had downed the bloodthirster and saved my life. I swore to myself that she would not perish, and that if I lived, that day I would find a way to repay the debt of honour to her. That was, in hindsight, a strange thing for me to think. I was not used to having significant dealings with those not of my own kind, and in any case, we did not generally indulge in such concepts of honour debt as I am told that the wolves of Fenris do. Still, it gave me a purpose and a balance to my fighting. So we saw out those grinding hours. The platform was held, and more troops were airlifted in, and then we were able to push down the stairs again to retake the plain below. Valoris led a second counter-assault following the destruction of the last greater demon, and after that we could hammer our way out towards the perimeter of the old Voidport. I killed more creatures of the enemy in those hours than I had done over hundreds of years previously. Despite my wounds, I found the combat, as Navradaran might have said, invigorating. It gave me pleasure to see those things crushed beneath the heel of my spear. It gave me pleasure to feel my body pushed to its limits. I felt a strange sense of release, as if long invisible fetters had been lifted from my arms, letting them move with greater purpose and vindication. By the time the sun was high in the sky, we knew the fighting would soon be over. The demons were fleeing, flickering back into their own realm, even before our spears could plunge into their translucent bodies. To my surprise, I found that I almost regretted the cessation of violence. By the time I sent Gnosis hurtling into the last neck of the last kill, I felt no elation of any sort. All I felt was a curious ache of withdrawal, of something being snatched from me before I could fully understand it. This was the disturbing factor. I wanted more.
Chapter 23. Tyron. Even then, there was no rest. In the hours that followed the battle for the Lion's Gate, the prudence of the Ark's doctrine became fully apparent, as our preparations meant we could readily ferry thousands of battle-hardened troops to staunch the gaps left by the custodian's sortie. We could mobilize our titans to hold sentinel within the inner palace, and airlift even greater numbers to hold the line inside the gate's remains. It became clear we would endure. The greater demons were destroyed, the lesser still hunted down. We had taken fearful losses. We would be assessing the damage for weeks afterwards, but the unthinkable had been averted by the narrowest of margins. Soon, activity within the palace shifted, and there were suddenly inquisitors everywhere. I saw vulture-like ships hovering over the fields of slaughter, and strange figures wearing uniforms even I didn't recognize, stalking through the drifting smoke. We were doing what we always did after such events, trying to smother them, to erase them, to push them out of our minds. That exercise was more futile then than it had ever been, and so there was an even greater unreality to the days that followed. Our labors remained intense, but the focus shifted. We rebuilt as best we could. Huge teams of reclamators and engine seers were sent to the defense lines, only to be held back from the worst of the combat sites by inquisitorial agents. And fresh fighting broke out between rival hoarders of secrets. There was a mood in the palace that we had fallen as far as it was possible to go. The Astronomicon remained dormant, limiting our communication with the wider Imperium. Our planetary defenses, so painstakingly constructed over so many centuries, had shown they could be bypassed with trivial ease, and so covetous eyes began to be cast over the millions of troops locked up in the ranks upon ranks of high-orbit defense stations. In the shock of the assault on the wall, very few remembered the plight of the immense world city beyond, which remained restive, fearful, and starving. Even within the hallowed precincts, every face was grey and every back was hunched. I saw men and women who had once worn chains of pearls and cloaks of platinum thread, who now looked little better than overdressed beggars, wandering through the empty halls as if they had forgotten their own names. The cavernous refectories were empty, the chapels echoing. At the time of our worst crisis, we had not needed to worry about the chain of command, since the Captain General and Lord Gilliman had seized the initiative.